Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
if you are uprooted and have come to belong,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
In 381 CE, it was generally considered unacceptable for women to travel alone. Cultures, societal norms, they varied greatly throughout this time, but for the most part, women were expected to stay close to the safety of home because of their fragility and because it was presumed we had natural inclinations toward misbehavior. Basically, people believed women couldn't control themselves. But a woman named Egeria, she didn't get that memo. Egeria was one of the earliest recorded female pilgrims. She didn't subscribe to the idea of what women were supposed to do. And maybe her rebelliousness was a benefit of her wealth or her privilege, because the best guess is that her family was probably merchants. They had a lot of wealth and connections, because it would have required a lot of funds and affiliations to go all the places that Egeria did. But go she did. And she kept a diary of her travels and her adventures, and she recorded her doing all kinds of things that that society presumed only men were capable of. Trekking up the sides of mountains without ropes or harnesses that we would have used today. She pilgrimaged to sacred summits where few and definitely no women that we know of had journeyed before. She used her Bible as a kind of tourist guide. She carried it with her everywhere. And wherever it mentioned Moses or Jesus had been, she tried to go there too. In Egeria, she sought out burial sites of prophets and the homes of patriarchs, and she drank from the wells and the streams mentioned in the biblical text. She spent time with groups of women who lived and thrived in communities together without male influence. And she spent what must have been decades of her life trying to literally step into the biblical stories. And today, if we were going to go trek where Egeria did, we would still find everywhere she went and all that she accomplished remarkable. She did it all without GPS or REI or societal support. It had to have been incredibly mentally, physically, and emotionally difficult. Yet the pages of her diary, they're filled with records of all the joys of her journeys. She rarely recorded complaints or the aches and the pains, physical or emotional, that she must have felt. And looking into her life, it makes me wonder, what was driving her? Why did a woman like her leave the safety of the familiar and choose the suffering of pilgrimage instead? And we can only guess. A basic definition of pilgrimage is a journey to an unknown and unfamiliar place where a person goes in search of new or expanded meaning of themselves, of others, of natures, of a higher power. Pilgrims often experience transformation, and then they return to their daily lives. That's your basic definition. And we often connect pilgrimages with religion. And although pilgrimage is an important part of many faiths, they aren't always for religious reasons. For some faiths, like Islam, pilgrimage is a requirement. For others, like Judaism and Christianity, it's more of a suggestion, something that only the really devout participate in, or that the wealthy have time for. The medieval era was ripe with pilgrimages. You could even get a papal indulgence if you went to designated holy spots, which that means that's basically a coupon from the Pope for the forgiveness of a sin. Talk about motivation for criminal activity. It was definitely later frowned upon. But pilgrims often armed themselves defensively. They wanted to protect against the ordinary dangers that they might find on their journey, like thieves or wild animals. But medieval pilgrimages also caused some pretty serious clashes between cultures and faiths, particularly when the pilgrims were armed and commissioned by their governments, like the Crusaders. The Crusades were forms of basic armed military pilgrimages, but their intent was different. They went with the intent to take and to overtake. Now, there were pilgrims traveling to the same places as the Crusaders at the same time, but these non-crusading pilgrims, their goal was transformation. Again, both had intent, both would return home changed, but for very different reasons. And pilgrimage is not a thing of just the past. There are whole fields of sociological and psychological studies of pilgrimages. There are podcasts and websites dedicated to pilgrimage tourism. Now, many people still choose to pilgrimage for religious significance, but others go for completely non-spiritual reasons, maybe to meet people on their pathway, because they love the outdoors or a challenge, or they like heritage sites. Maybe they go for physical or mental health benefits. But again, the intention ultimately is transformation. In 2018, 164,836 women from around the world journeyed on the Camino del Santiago. This is the pathway that leads to the burial site of St. James, and it's one of the most famous pilgrimages in the world. So this number of women, this was 50% more women than men went on this pilgrimage. When I told my bachelor brother this, he immediately looked into it as a travel destination. But pilgrimage is still happening. And if we really think about it, it's a part of all the best stories that we love. Those with the classic formula of the hero or heroine's journey. Think Star Wars and Marvel or Percy Jackson or The Hunger Games, right? A character chooses or is forced into a life-changing mental or physical journey. They face dangers and perils. They have a friend or a mentor who trains or advises them. They battle demons, real or imaginary, external and internal, both. And just when we think all is lost, they dig deeper and they find new strength from inside themselves or outside themselves. And in the end, they come out on top. But they will never be the same or look at the world in the same way again. And all of this should fit neatly into a 2-hour movie or a 350-page book. Now, my true confession, ask my husband and my kids, is that I typically fall asleep in most of the big action movies right towards the end when there's about 30 to 40 minutes left. This is always the biggest action part. I mean, I know what's going to happen. There's fighting and destruction and cities being ridiculously destroyed. There's the near death of all that we love. And I usually wake up for the resolution at the end. And don't get me wrong, I love movies and I love action movies, but I guess my brain figures that that part isn't the essential part to the story. I don't know. But I also love a good rom-com. It's all the same formula. I'm a sucker for a happy ending in a movie. I want the story to go full circle. Heroine sitting back at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee, changed. Maybe a few battle wounds and a lot more wisdom, but that's okay. That's a lot more relatable than superpowers. But these stories are really just the journey of our lives told over and over and over again with a little bit more action and good special effects and security of knowing the ending. Real life journeys and pilgrimages aren't tied up so easily as action films, but they do contain some of the same elements. Whether it's journeying to the Himalayas or Mecca or the caves of Ireland or traveling to dip in the River Ganges or walking through the Vietnam Memorial or Auschwitz, pilgrimage can be mental or physical. It can be personal. It can be corporate. It might be walking through grief or life transitions or spiritual crisis or living through 2020. Pilgrimages are always transformative. How you begin is not how you end. And although you may return to your ordinary life, as the definition says, or discover a new normal, as we say ad nauseum now, we do not remain unchanged. There's something about removing yourself or being removed from ordinary from our ordinary and stepping toward new beginnings and new perspectives that makes us tremble with fear. And at the same time, it calls to us, maybe like Egeria. Maybe we, deep down, we are all looking for transformation. And all of us are on a journey. That's just another way of saying life. And we will all be transformed along the way. I think what makes pilgrimage different from just a journey is intention. We've all participated in, or are participating in, or will participate in, some sort of pilgrimage. You could say that what you're doing right now, choosing to participate in this service, this video, is a type of pilgrimage. I mean, what brought you here today? Was it a tradition you can't shake that told you good people go to church on Sundays? Is it a positive habit that you've incorporated into your week or your month? Is it in hopes of spiritual or mental or emotional transformation? Maybe you aren't sure, but you just found yourself here. I am assuming, though, that you chose to turn on the TV today or your phone or whatever it is. You chose this link. Why? I have a feeling most of you didn't wake up and say, I am pilgrimaging to Crosspoint today. But participating in worship and spiritual conversation, it's a type of pilgrimage. It puts us in the pathway of others. It should force us to look both inside and outside ourselves. It should force us to consider or to reconsider. And we hope to be transformed by our interactions here, even if it's just in the most minor of ways. Another pilgrimage, what brought you to where you currently live today? Are you new to where you are? Few of us were probably born where we live now. But if we are, it's unlikely that our parents or our grandparents or our great-grandparents were. What was your intention in living and being and moving where you are? Did you come for a job, a family, a promise of success, a raise? Did you want a different, unique place to raise your kids? Did you read something about having the top location to raise a family? Something led you here. Maybe you were in pursuit of something, but you had to take first steps to get here. And not surprisingly, sacred texts, including our own, they're full of pilgrimage stories. I mean, just a few chapters into the Hebrew Bible, what Christians refer to as the Old Testament, Abraham considered, you know, he was considered the father of the three largest monastic religions in the world today. He was told by God to leave his home, to travel, to pilgrimage, until God told him to stop. Jesus famously journeyed into the wilderness for 40 days. I mean, the main characters of our Christmas story, Mary and Joseph, could be considered to have gone on a pilgrimage to Bethlehem, although they may not have called it that. Their journey was intentional. It was transformative. It had all the elements, and they definitely did not leave the same way they came. Other pilgrims in our Advent season are the characters we sometimes call the three wise men. And typically, their story isn't celebrated until after Christmas, but we American Protestants like to lump it in with the Nativity because it makes a much cuter manger scene. But the so-called wise men, they weren't actually present at the birth of Jesus. They entered the story about a year after his birth, and they presented gifts at his home, not in a barn. The narrative, it's found only in the Gospel according to Matthew, and it reads from Will Gaffney's translation from the Greek like this. Now, Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of King Herod. Suddenly, sages from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the one born king of the Judeans? For we have seen his star at its ascent and have come to reverence him." When King Herod heard this, he was shaken, and all Jerusalem with him. Then, calling together the chief priests and religious scholars of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah would be born. And they said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called the sages and learned from them the time when the star had appeared. When they had heard the king, they left. And there suddenly was the star that they had seen its ascent going before them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw that the star had stopped, they rejoiced. Their joy was exuberant. And on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and reverenced him. Then, opening their treasure, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So the word translated here as sages, it's actually a transliteration of the Greek word where we get the word magi and magic. And so it can also be referred to as wise men or astrologers or sorcerers. These characters evoked mystery because historical magi were often interpreters of dreams. They could see things other people couldn't. Most of them dabbled in or they seriously studied some form of astrology. Now, we're not told that there were only three magi, nor are we told that they were actually all men. This is something that we've assumed over the years. Like Egeria, who traveled not that much later than their story, it's possible that one or more of the magi was a woman. None of them were locals for sure, and they most definitely were not Jewish. It's most probable that they were Zoroastrian, which is one of the oldest monotheistic religions that we know about. And their worship focused a lot on the sun and the sky as the center of things, so they would have had their focus on what was happening in the atmosphere. Like Egeria, you needed to have a lot of time and a lot of money for a trip like theirs. I mean, the text tells us that they had treasure with them. Maybe that's where we get the idea they were kings. Because the text only mentioned three notable gifts, gifts that were fit for royalty, gifts that were fit for kings, we have come to call these wealthy pilgrim astrologers the three kings or the three magi. Well, these magi, they had had their eyes on the skies for a while because they were apparently tracking and predicting the path of a very particular star. They'd been researching it. They'd been studying it. They'd been looking into old documents. They'd been consulting it. They had been trying to find its meaning. And when it finally came into view, it prompted this pilgrimage. And make no mistake, their journey was intentional. They may not have been exactly sure who or what they would find, but these wealthy astrologers, they felt compelled to follow. And they most assuredly knew that they would not return unchanged. They couldn't. I mean, can you imagine the stories they told when they got home? There's a certain amount of courage needed when embarking on a pilgrimage, no matter who you are. Egeria, Mary, Joseph, the Magi, even the woman on the Camino de Santiago, they could all be considered some form of brave. Pilgrimage involves bravery because it means stepping into the unknown. You know, for a long time, the Orthodox faith, pilgrimage was discouraged. Now, the fear wasn't that something would happen to the pilgrim or that the pilgrim would be transformed. Religious leaders knew that that would happen. The fear was that they might find spiritual awakening outside of the prescribed boundaries of their religious parameters. Pilgrimage might lead to thinking and self-discovery. Well, the Orthodox leaders, they weren't wrong. Pilgrimage is dangerous and unpredictable for a lot of reasons. And many of us have found that our own pilgrimages have done exactly what those leaders feared. They've taken us away from the safety of religious dogma and structure and forced us face to face with questions. It's transformed us into people that maybe our grandmothers might not be comfortable with. Many of us are in the midst of those pilgrimages right now. Maybe we'll be on them for the rest of our lives. Pilgrimages of the mind, pilgrimages of the heart. And this type of pilgrimage means choosing to leave home with our questions. But for these journeys, the important thing isn't the answers. It's the transformation that happens when we are simply brave enough to ask the questions. Maybe something that we once thought or believed no longer quite adds up. Maybe something we were told to believe turns out not to be true, which seems to be okay when it comes to ideas like where do babies come from and Santa Claus. But people get really nervous about that when we start questioning the boundaries of our faith. Maybe somebody defied our expectations in a good way or a bad way. But regardless, it's caused us to rethink everything. These pilgrimages of the mind and the heart and the spirit, they never have a predetermined destination. If they did, would they really be authentic? But they do require a sort of defensive arming, courage. Courage to take the first step and to not retreat when it gets hard. And rest assured, transformation will happen and it will feel dangerous and unpredictable. Some of us are on forced pilgrimages. We didn't choose to be on our current pathway, but we can definitely feel that it's transforming us. And sometimes we don't like what we find ourselves becoming. It takes a different sort of bravery when we find that we may not have control over our journey. I mean, we actually never really do, but we always do have control over our responses to our journey and the type of people we want to be in the end. Maybe that's what turns a journey into a pilgrimage, intention. Pilgrimage also forces us to walk a path with others who might be so different than us, but for some reason have convened on a common human pathway. There's camaraderie and knowing that others are on the same journey, even if it may not be for the same reasons. You know, in Islam, if you're able, you're supposed to pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca at least once in your lifetime. It's called the Hajj. Did you know that all pilgrims wear the same plain tunic as they travel? It's a reminder that God doesn't discriminate between prince and pauper, but that everybody is equal on pilgrimage. On the journey, there's no distinction between class or race or gender. And this past Wednesday, we recognized losses at our Remember service. And for some of us, grief is an unchosen pilgrimage. Like the Hajj, this type of pilgrimage, the pilgrimage of grief, doesn't discriminate. There are no special deals. There's no exceptions. I mean, the Christmas season itself, Advent, right? The time after Thanksgiving till December 25th and after, it's a forced annual pilgrimage, really. I mean, each year we embark on the journey of anticipation toward December 25th, and for some Christian traditions, even beyond. It happens whether we're ready for it or not. And it's up to us to find meaning and intention in that pilgrimage. And it's also the start, December 25th, of the Christian calendar. The start is marked not by death, but by birth. Marked by the day that the world would no longer be the same. And we take this pilgrimage every year. It's a great time to pause, to look back and see your transformation over the past year. And then also to set intention for the pathway that you'll be on this year, whether you know what it's going to be or not. All journeys change us. All of us are journeying. All of us are being changed by what we experience and what we choose every day, whether we recognize it or not. And most of the time it happens so slowly we don't realize how we're being shaped by our paths. But again, a journey becomes a pilgrimage when an intention is involved. We are all becoming something, someone. We are all transforming. The question is, what is transforming us? According to the definition, the pilgrim will conclude their journey and then return to their ordinary lives. Well, eventually, the three magi returned home. Eventually, Egeria returned home. Eventually, the women on the pathway returned home. But although they returned to the ordinary, they would never be the same. And when one returns from a pilgrimage, we either find ourselves more satisfied and grateful for the things we have and how things are, or we find it impossible to return to the way things were. So I guess my question for today is, what sort of path are we on? What are we allowing to transform us? Because be assured that transformation is happening. The question is whether or not it's intentional. Are we just journeying or are we pilgrimaging? What is dictating our journey? Really, the important thing is the first step of leaving home. So let us arm ourselves with the courage to do that. This week, let's find time to take a look at our path, our influences, the Advent season, to pay attention to where we are placing our feet and to what we are allowing to transform us. Thanks, Crosspoint.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.